Good morning. Today's off in Yevamos Pei Gimel. We're on Pei Beis Amud Beis. We're halfway down the Amud. And now this is going to be the third day that we're going to be discussing androgynous and the status of an androgynous. So anatomically, the androgynous is male and female. So the androgynous has both genitalia, both male and female genitalia. So anatomically, so this is a hybrid. However, halachically, so what is the androgynous? So you go all the way back to the Mishnah on Pei Aleph. So the Mishnah back on Pei Aleph says the androgynous is a male. There are a lot of indicators in the Mishnah that the androgynous is a male. The androgynous Kohen who marries a woman, she can eat truma. The androgynous is involved in a homosexual act, so that's considered a capital offense. So the meaning of homosexuality. So the so there are a lot of indicators in the Mishnah that an androgynous, even though anatomically is a hybrid, but halachically is a male. That's what we got in the Mishnah. And then when we got to the Gemara, we got a machlokas, Reish Lakish, and Rav Yochanan. So as much as the Mishnah seems to be pretty clear on the matter, so the Gemara has a machlokas on Marayim. So Rav Yochanan, let's start with Rav Yochanan because that's easy. Rav Yochanan says the androgynous is a male. In other words, like the Mishnah indicates, it's a zachar vaday. Even though there are a female anatomical components to the androgynous, but the way to categorize him halachically is a male. That's Shittas Rav Yochanan. And if you recall, going all the way back to Pei Aleph, that's now 2 days ago, so Rav Yochanan says, so the Kohen androgynous is married to the woman, so what can he feed her? He can feed her truma, he can feed her chazav ishok, meaning he's a male, they're married, mazel tov, and she's now afforded to be able to eat all the manos kahuna that he's able to eat. On the other hand, Reish Lakish says, not so fast. Reish Lakish says, we're not sure. Halacha does not determine whether he's an absolute male. What halacha will say about him is that maybe he's a male, right? It's a suffix. So then how can the Mishnah say that he's able to feed a truma? Because the Mishnah is only talking about truma bismanazeh. Truma bismanazeh, which is the din derabanan. So since the truma nowadays is derabanan, so the chachamim said, you know, I know he's a suffix, but we're only talking about truma derabanan, that he's allowed to feed her. But if we're talking about truma daraisa, and certainly if we're talking about chaz v'shok, so that he's not allowed to feed her because we don't know definitively that he is a zachar. So we have a basic machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What is the halachic status of an androgynous? According to Rav Yochanan, it's a zachar vadai. And according to Reish Lakish, suffik. Okay, good. So, and what we've been doing now for the last 2 days, and this is now going to be our third day discussing this, but this will be the last day we're discussing it, is we've been litigating. Is Rav Yochanan right? Is Reish Lakish right? And we've been going back and forth now for the last couple of days. And now Tanan. So what do? We go back to our Mishnah, meaning that we're going to continue litigating based on what we learned in the Mishnah. What did we learn in the Mishnah? So Tanan, androgynous, no say. So it says androgynous is marrying a woman, and the word no say certainly indicates that lechatchila, meaning that if he wants to opt into marriage, so he may do so. So this obviously would bode well for Rav Yochanan. This obviously presents a problem to Reish Lakish. If we're talking about a suffix, so why would the Mishnah then indicate that this is something that he can enter into lechatchila? Certainly, that wouldn't be the case according to Reish Lakish. So tani im nasa. So okay. So for Reish Lakish, what you're going to have to say is that when the Mishnah says no say, what the Mishnah really means is im nasa. If he marries her, so we have to recognize the marriage. Why? Because he may be a male. That's the way to read the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says that's a curious way to read the Mishnah. That's not what the Mishnah says. No se ketani. Yet, right, we're all reading the same Mishnah. The Mishnah says no se, which indicates ideally he can marry her. So, latamech my avalonisa. Oh, so the Gemara says, yeah, but then just keep reading in the Mishnah. Lo nisa, he cannot be the subject of marriage, meaning he cannot take on the role of a woman in the marriage. That's where the Mishnah says lo nisa. So, ela mai nisa diavad. So, no se nami diavad. So now, what does Nisa mean? Nisa means b'di'evet. Nose also means b'di'evet, meaning we have to be consistent in the way we read the Mishnah. If the word Nisa means afilu b'di'evet, so then the word Nose is afilu b'di'evet as well. Even though, grammatically, Nose certainly sounds like a lechatchila point, but once you see it in the context of the Mishnah, so it could be understood as b'di'evet. Amrei lo. So the Gemara says, the response to that would be, no, that's not how you parse the Mishnah. Here's how you parse the Mishnah. Nose lechatchila mashma. So when the Mishnah says no say, that means ideally he's allowed to marry a woman. Again, this would be in defense of Rav Yochanan. And avalonise di'evin amilo. And avalonise is to be understood as no, b'di'evin, if he's the subject of marriage, meaning if he wants to take on the role of the woman in the marriage, so afilu b'di'evin, it wouldn't work. Okay, that's how you would parse the Mishnah. Okay, so what do we have right now? The simplest reading of the Mishnah goes like Rav Yochanan. that really the androgynous is categorized as a male. Yes, he has anatomical parts to him, female anatomical parts to him, but halacha views him strictly as a male. And we just read the Mishnah in that light, in that viewpoint. So the Gemara says, fine. V'hamid diktani seifa. The Gemara says, here, try this. Keep reading in the Mishnah. And that is Rabbi Elazar Omer and Joshua Chayav and Lav Skila Kizachar. So in the Mishnah, we have Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. After the point of no say Nisa, then the Mishnah introduces us to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that if he's involved in a homosexual act, so then he's subject to Skila, meaning it's an act of Mishkav Zachor. Now, Michlal de Tanakama Sefuki Misafkele. What does that mean? It means that Rabbi Elazar is contrasting an earlier position. The earlier position must be Suffolk, meaning the earlier position would say that the androgynous is a suffix. Rabbi Eliezer is there to counter and say, no, not a suffix, but rather a vade zachar. Right? Isn't that the right way of reading the Mishnah? And the Gemara says, no, that's not the right way to read the Mishnah. Bein Lamar, Mifshat, Pshita Le. No. According to both the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer, there is no vacillation. There is no suffix whatsoever. The androgynous is a male, meaning, again, we're reading the Mishnah in light of the Shita Rav Yochanan. Androgynous is a Zachar Vadai. So, but there is a subtle distinction to be made between Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer. The subtle difference between them is the following. Look, when it comes to Mishkav Zachar, so how does one violate Mishkav Zachar? So that's by, forgive me, but I'm just being clear, that's by anal penetration. Okay, and from this point in time, just so I could say it a little bit more cleaner, we're going to call that Bia Shaloka Darka. Fine. So that is the way to violate Mishkav Zachar, and that's unequivocal. That is certainly agreed to by all. However, with the androgynous, so he happens to have another orifice, and that is that he has a female anatomical part. And so, therefore, what is open for now a debate is the following. Let's say the penetration goes through this female anatomical part. So is that considered also Mishkav Zachar? Meaning he's a Zachar. Is one going to be in violation of Mishkav Zachar if he penetrates from the front side? So Demar Safar Chayelav and Askila, Mishim Mekomas Demar Safar Kizachar. And so that's going to be the debate between Rabbi Eliezer and the Tanakama. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's only Bia Shlo Kedarka, which would be subject to a capital punishment. And according to the Tanakama, no, it's Bia Shlo Kedarka and Bia Kedarka as well. Okay. And oddly enough, we're going to come back to that a little bit later on this morning. Okay. And explain that a little bit better later this morning. Anyway, but a Bain Latanakama and Bain Rabbi Eliezer, an androgynous is a male, full-fledged male, and in other words, halacha only sees him as a male. And then the only question becomes is that when he's involved in Mishkav Zachor, so from Bia Shlo Kedarka, again, no debate. That's an act of Mishkav Zachor. If it's, let's say the penetration is coming from the front side, so that's the machlokus between the Tanaim. Amarav. Okay, so where are we right now? So far, we have a Mishnah. Mishnah, the way we have laid it out, sounds pretty clear that the androgynous is halachically a Zachor. The Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish dispute this point, and according to Rav Yochanan, you read the Mishnah Kipshuto. And Reish Lakish will tell you no. That the androgynous is not a vade zachar, it's a suffix zachar. Okay? And so now for the last couple of days, we had the back and forth between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and it certainly sounds like the easier way to read the Mishnah is like Rav Yochanan. That part's true. Now, halacha. Now we get to discuss what's the halacha. Amar Rav. We're now in the very top of Pigim Alman Aleph, Leisa Lemasisa Mikame Braisa. Look, I know we have a Mishnah, but we also have a Braisa. We're going to introduce ourselves to the Braisa momentarily. And what we're going to do is something really strange and unusual. We're going to take the Mishnah, we're going to push it to the side, and we're going to favor the Braisa over the Mishnah. Now, if you've been around long enough, you'll know that's not a typical maneuver. Normally, the Mishnah is favored over the Braisa. So here, Rav is going to introduce and teach us that no, we're going to favor the Braisa over the Mishnah. So let's start off with introducing ourselves to the Braisa. What Braisa are we talking about? D'tanya, here we are, Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, very top line. Rabbi Yossi, Omer androgynous b'riyah b'fnei atzmo hu, v'lo yichriya bo chachamim im zachar m'nekeva. So here in the Braisa, it's a tosefta. So Rabbi Yossi says the androgynous is b'riyah b'fnei atzmo, its own separate category, and the chachamim did not determine whether it's zachar m'nekeva. Okay. Now that's markedly different than the Mishnah. The Mishnah had Rabbi Yossi saying that he's a zachar vadai. Here in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi saying, no, suffik. Now, this is an interesting point over here. In the Braisa, what is Rabbi Yossi saying? Well, actually, If you're reading the Braisa, you're going to walk away a little bit confused. Because first the Braisa says, Beria Bifnei Atzma. What does that mean? That there's a third column, right? In other words, there's a male, there's female, and then there's a third category. That's the that's how you would read the Braisa if you stop there. But keep reading in the Braisa. V'lo ichriya bo chachamim zachar nekeva. And the chachamim didn't determine whether he was male or female. That certainly sounds like, no, it's not a third column. It's just simply undetermined, meaning we don't know if he's male or we don't know he's female, meaning there are only two columns to choose from, and the only two categories to choose from, we just don't know which one he belongs to or she belongs to. Okay.
But in terms of like practical applications.
Wait, before that point. So which way is the right way to read the Braisa? As you can imagine, that's a machlokas. So Rashi and Tosos both are clearly of the position. The second way I present it is the correct way. Meaning, there is no third category. There's no third column. There's no third checkbox. There's no third box to check. Meaning, there are only two boxes. It's male, female. That's it. What about the androgynous? The androgynous is that we're just simply going to check both boxes. Meaning, we don't know which one it is. But it's not a third possibility. It's one of the first two possibilities. We just don't know. That's Rashi, and that's clearly Tosfos. You can see the top Tosfos over here. I'll just start us off on the Tosfos. Omari. Don't say Beria Bifnei Atzma the way we normally do, which is that it's a new category. No, that's not the pshat. Sheino Safik, Ella Beria Dekamer Hacha, Hainu, Shehu Safik, Ke Dekamer Velo Hichriyo Bo. Right? The Ri says is that really what you have to focus on is the Lo Hichriyo. Yes, it's true. The language of the Braisa does use the word Beria Bifnei Atzma. And yes, it's true. Beria Bifnei Atzma typically means that it's a new column, it's a new category, but the Tosfos says, but not here. Here is not new, it's not a new category, it's either male or female, but lo ichriyu chachamim. But the chachamim just simply don't know. Okay, it's Tosfos, and if you read Rashi carefully, it certainly sounds like Rashi is in agreement with that point. Who's on the other side of this issue? The Rambam. I don't have it in front of me right now, so I'm begging you, look it up. Don't trust me. But the Rambam writes that the androgynous is Beria Bifnei Atzma, separate category, not male, not female. Beria Bifnei Atzma, separate category. Okay, it's a great question, and I appreciate you asking me. Okay, good. So the Okay, fine. Well, there's still more to go before we get to any halachic questions. So, what I'm going to ask is let's first see the Gemara, and then you can ask me questions, which I'm going to just simply I'm going to duck in and escape from. Okay, but anyway, but first let's see all the Gemara. So, Adaraba. So now the Gemara is bothered because again, what is our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says Zachar Vaday. The Braisa says Safek, and again, what does that mean? Safek. So you can learn like Tosfos, you can learn like Rambam, but we have clearly a divergent viewpoint of what the androgynous is between Rav Yossi and Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi of the Mishnah versus Rav Yossi of the Braisa. So Adarabba, so the Gemara says, what a strange maneuver to favor the Braisa over the Mishnah. Like, what are you doing? Adarabba, leisa l'Braisa mekamei masisin. So the Gemara says like this, I know that we should be favoring the Braisa in this case over here. Why? Midashavki Rav Yossi l'Barzuke shemamina Adarabba. Because here, read the Mishnah carefully and then read the Braisa carefully. If you read the Mishnah carefully, right, I'm going to go back to pay off. I'm just looking at the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? It says, Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Shimon, Omrim. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say. So Rabbi Yossi was put together with Rabbi Shimon, meaning it was a pair who took the position that your androgynous Cohen, who's married to a woman, she can eat truma, okay, meaning he's a male. But when you get to the Braisa, it's not Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. It's just Rabbi Yossi by himself. So the Gemara says, here's how I'll recreate what must have happened. What must have happened is that Rabbi Yossi first shared the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, that he was a Zachar Vadai, and then upon further review and upon further consideration, Rabbi Yossi said, you know what, Rabbi Shimon? I'm leaving you. Meaning, I'm now recanting on my original position that I thought I agreed with you, and now I'm leaving you. And now I'm moving over to a position, Suffolk, meaning not Vada, but rather Suffolk. Okay. That is the Gemara's understanding of the recreation of what must have happened. Okay. It's so funny. If you asked me, I could have just said that the Braisa is telling us what Rav Yossi originally thought, and then he agreed to Rabbi Shimon, meaning I'm not sure why the Gemara is so compelled to say that this is what must have happened.
But the fact that it's a brayta doesn't mean that it was actually excluded. This view was excluded. And that's how it became a brayta in the first place.
Yeah,
it wasn't a brayta.
Well, that's why the Gemara originally thought, like, what are you doing? Meaning, how are you leaving a brayta? How are you leaving the mission, favoring the brayta?
Right.
And so the Gemara is saying, well, yeah, but in this particular case, the clue is that in the brayta, it's Rav Yossi by himself. And the assumption of the Gemara is that Rav Yossi left Rabbi Shimon. That's the assumption. Okay. Ushmul Amar Leisel Brayta Mekame Masisin. So now Shmuel will just simply say, how about this? Let's just go back to what our default was, which is, I know there's a Brayta, I know there's a Mishnah. How about this? How about we favor the Mishnah over the Brayta? Adarab Leisel Masisin Mekame Brayta, Dashamin Le Shmuel, Dechaish Lechida. The Gemara says, don't we know that Shmuel is concerned about a minority position? This is based on a Gemara that we saw earlier in the Masechta. I'm not going to go through it right now. Please forgive me. But anyway, so why would Shmuel just simply be comfortable with the Mishnah when meanwhile the Brisa expresses a singular viewpoint of Rav Yossi, and Shmuel normally is worried about a singular viewpoint. So Hani Mili Kila Mitakra Masisin. Avaki Mitakra Masisin Lo Chayish. So the Gemara says, yeah, Shmuel's worried about a minority position if it's expressed in a Mishnah. But if it's not expressed in a Mishnah, the only way we know about it is because of a Brisa, Shmuel will just simply shrug his shoulders. Okay, it's a Brisa. Great. That doesn't concern me. If it were a Mishnah expressing a singular viewpoint, okay, you got my attention. But if it's a singular viewpoint in a Brisa, shoulder shrug. Okay. So, where are we right now? So, hopefully, a little bit confused. Okay. Which makes sense. I mean, the topic we're discussing is confusing. Right? The person's confused. But where are we in terms of halacha? So understandably, we're confused. Meaning now, just quickly to recap, we have Rav Yossi of our Mishnah together with Rabbi Shimon holding that he's a definitive male. We have Rav Yossi of the Brisa saying Safek, and even within Safek, even that we're not sure what that means. Meaning Tosos clears of the position that Safek means either male or female, but we don't know. And according to the Rambam, no, there's a third box. Birya Bifnei Atzma. Good. And in that now, we are further complicated by the fact of, well, which one do we favor? Do we favor the Mishnah? Do we favor the Brisa? Rav is telling us that we should favor the Brisa. Shmuel says that we should be favoring the Mishnah. Okay, so at this point in time, it's yet undetermined what the halach is. Stay tuned. Amri Bei Rav Mishmei Derav Halachik Rav Yossi. So, Bei Rav tells us, Bei Rav literally means the yeshiva of Rav. But as we know, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and we're going to highlight this point in just a few minutes from now, Bei Rav is a reference to Rav Huna. Okay, it's code for Rav Huna. So Bei Rav says in the name of Rav, now Rav Huna is a student of Rav, which makes sense. So Rav Huna says in the name of Rav, halachik Rav Yossi. So the halacha falls like Rav Yossi in two areas. Number one, androgynous, and number two is harkava, to be explained. And Shmuel Amar, Shmuel's of the position that the halacha falls like Rav Yossi, bikoshi, ubikiddush. On two other areas of halacha, we fall like Rav Yossi, according to Shmuel, both on the topic of koshi and on the topic of kiddush, again, to be explained momentarily. Now, here's where it gets funny. Bei Rav tells us that Rav holds that the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. Let's ask a simple question. Which Rav Yossi? There are two Rav Yossis that we know of. We know of Rav Yossi of the Mishnah, we know of Rav Yossi of the Brisa. So when Bei Rav tells us that according to Rav, the halacha is like Rav Yossi, so now it's complicated by the fact of which Rav Yossi are we talking about? So Rashi's of the position, as is Tosfos, that we're talking about Rav Yossi of our Mishnah. How come? So Rashi makes an outstanding point. Because all these other cases, which we're going to see in just a moment, are Rav Yossi coupled with Rav Shimon, and all of them are quoting Mishnayos. So if you'd like to be consistent, which we always like to do, so it would seem like the Rav Yossi here in Androgynous is the Rav Yossi of the Mishnah, not there of the Brisa. Okay. Not everyone is in agreement with Rashi and Tosfos over here. So again, I know it's confusing. I know. Because there are two Rav Yossis, and even as the Gemara clearly says the halacha is like Rav Yossi, we're still at a loss in terms of which Rav Yossi. Okay, so so let's go over all four halachic points. Number one, androgynous. The halacha is like Rav Yossi. And again, left as a question mark, which Rav Yossi? But I'll just say it over like Rashi, okay? Because typically in the daf, that's what we do. So according to Rav Yossi, which Rav Yossi are we talking about? Rav Yossi of our Mishnah, which says that the androgynous is vadai a male. Okay, I'm just telling everyone here that the Rambam does not conclude that way. The Rambam's of the position that the androgynous is Birya Bifnei Atzmo. It's own separate category. But anyway, so on Jarshan is Hadamaran. So we already covered that area. We can move on. Harkava. Now the halacha is like Rav Yossi when it comes to Harkava. Harkava is grafting, but what's the halacha? Did none. So this is a Mishnah in Shvius, second parak. A notin vein mavricha mei markivin era Shvius pachas mishloshim yom lufnei Rosh Hashanah. So what you cannot do is that you cannot plant. You cannot graft. Well, really, markivin is grafting. Mavrichin, so that is pulling a branch back down into the ground. Okay, I know there's a fancier word for it. Okay, I don't have a green thumb. Okay, so anyway, they're all forms of planting. So you can't do that 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. Vimnata vehivrich vehirkiv yakor. Now, if you do that before the Rosh Hashanah of Shviz, so what you have to do is you have to uproot it because you violated the Isser of planting during the Shemitah year. And so therefore, it has to be done 30 days prior. 30 days prior to what? So it sounds like 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah. In just a moment, we're gonna edit that point in just a moment. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kol harkavah she'eino koletes k'shlosha yamim shuva nekoletes. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it needs 3 days to take root. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Omerim shtei shabbos, and according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, it takes 2 weeks to take root. So really, what we're talking about over here is taking root. How long does it take to take root? So we have three opinions over here in this Mishnah. Either a month, or 3 days, or 2 weeks. I know this seems like an empirical point. It seems like a point of just reality. So, but not necessarily, meaning taking root can have different halachic definitions. And again, if I knew more about the whole gardening, vegetation, growing, and so I'd understand a little bit better how, and I'd be able to articulate all this a little bit better. But right now, I'm just going to say like we see it. And that is that machlok is in terms of how long it takes root. V'amarav Nachman, that's the Mishnah. So v'amarav Nachman, amarav abaravu, l'divrei omer shloshim, tzarech shloshim v'shlosha. L'divrei omer shlosha, tzarech shlosha v'shloshim. L'divrei omer shtei shabbosos, tzarech shtei shabbosos, u'shloshim. Now, whichever position you take, what you have to do is you have to tack on another 30 days. Why? Now again, everything I'm saying is like Rashi. I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi. And there are other ways to say it, but again, I'm streamlining and simplifying just to make this easier to digest. And that is that when does the Shemitah year begin? So the answer is Rosh Hashanah, but not really. There's something called Tosefes Rosh Hashanah, meaning that Rosh Hashanah, as far as halach is concerned, so you have to add on to Rosh Hashanah, just like by Shabbos, you have to be Mosif onto Shabbos, right? The Torah never gives us the amount of time you have to be Mosif onto Shabbos, but you have to be Mosif. And the same thing with Yom Kippur, and the same thing with Yontif. Okay. And everything I'm saying right now, really, I'm oversimplifying everything right now, but let's just keep it nice and simple. So the same thing is true regarding Shemitah. For the seventh year where the land has to rest, so you have to be Mosif. How much do you have to be Mosif? A month. So when you get to the beginning of Elul, so you're already in the Shemitah year. Okay. So now, I have to plant something where it takes root before that. So whatever your number is, 3 days, a month, or 2 weeks, however long it needs to take root, it needs to take root that time before 30 days. So if it's 3 days to take root, it's 3 plus 30. If it's 2 weeks to take root, 14 plus 30. If it's a month to take root, 30 and 30. And by the way, what I'm not doing over here is that I'm assuming a month is 30 days. See Rashi over here? Rashi doesn't say it exactly like that. Rashi says it differently. It's fine. The way I presented it right now is enough just to get through a basic understanding of the Gemara. Ushmul Amar, and I'm sorry. And the point of all this is that who do we passing like? We passing like Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi coupled together with Rabbi Shimon. Who say? 2 weeks. So if you want to plant anything before Shemitah, what does that mean? It means that the seeds have to be planted 44 days before Rosh Hashanah of the Shemitah year. Okay, good. Next, Shmuel Amar. Now Shmuel says Halacha falls like Rav Yossi on two areas. What are the two areas? Koshi and Kiddush. So let's do a quick introduction to Koshi, and then let's see the mission together. So what does it mean? It means like this. A woman, during her days of Nida, so she is a Nida. During her days of Ziva, so there's an expectation that she's not going to be discharging blood. But if she does, so then she'll be a Zava. For 1 day, a Zava Katana. 2 days, Zava Katana. 3 consecutive days, a Zava Gadola. Okay, again, I'm doing all this in really short order. When we get to Nida, Yirtz Hashem, we'll do this again, and much better, and much more detailed and articulate. However, the halach is very clear. If, let's say, she has discharged blood during her Yemei Ziva, but we know that it's labor. It's labor pain, and it's discharged as a result of the labor. So then, halachically, it's not viewed as Dam Ziva, it's viewed as Dam Leida. And therefore, she's not considered a Zava Gadola. She doesn't have to go through Shiva Nikim. She doesn't have to bring her Kabbonis for being a Zava Gadola. Now, how long can we attribute the discharging and the bleeding to labor? Machlokis in terms of duration. Did not. Kamiye Kishiyeha, Rabbi Meir Omer, Arbaim Ochamashim Yom. Rabbi Meir says 40, 50 days. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Dayeh Chacha. Rabbi Yehuda says a month. Again, see Rashi over here for the definition of a month in this context, but we're going to go on. I'll just translate it simply as a month. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, and Kushu Yosef, Mishtei Shabbosos. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon are of the opinion that it's 2 weeks. Meaning the labor discharge, the labor bleeding, the labor pain, all can only be called labor for 2 weeks, no more than 2 weeks. So any bleeding that occurs prior to 2 weeks of her actual delivery cannot be called Dam Leida, has to be looked at as Dam Ziva. Okay, fine. Anyway, and so in this regard, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, 2 weeks, according to Shmuel. The second halacha of Shmuel, where the halacha falls like Rabbi Yosef, and that's the halacha of Kiddush. Kiddush over here, having nothing to do with Kiddush, as you and I would think, but having to do with being Mikadesh Hazera. Did not a mesachek vano agabe tvaso shel chavero hareze kiddush v'chai b'achriuso div Rabbi Meir. Let's say I take my vines and I lay them over the grains of my friend, making kalayim. Okay? So I just made my friend's grain kalayim by taking the vines and laying it over there, laying it over his. So number one, I created kalayim with his grains, and therefore, what did I do? It's called damaging. What do I have to do? I have to pay for the damages. Wait 1 second. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, great question. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, as we're now on the top of the Amud Beis, Ein Adam Osu Davashena Shalo. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon are of the position that, what do you mean? You can't create Isser for something that belongs to somebody else, meaning it's not Usser. It's not yours. And you can't create an Isser for somebody else. And so in this regard, what Shmuel is telling us is Allah is like Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon. That you did not create Kalayim, because it's not yours. The only kalayim that you can create is your kalayim, but you can't create kalayim for somebody else. Okay, and therefore it's not us, sir. Therefore, you don't have to reimburse. Okay, because you didn't do any damages. Okay, so on two fronts of halacha, Rav says halacha is like Rav Yossi. On two fronts of halacha, Shmuel says halacha is like Rav Yossi. On the issues of androgynous and Harkava, Rav says Allah is like Rav Yossi. And on the issues of Kishu and Kiddush, so Shmuel says Allah is like Rav Yossi. Okay, one quick point, a really important point, and then we go on in the Gemara, and that is Ein Adam Osir Davashena Shalom. That's a little bit strange in this context over here. Meaning, when we say Ein Adam Osir Davashena Shalom, what's a classic example? So it's very simple. Yeah, perfect. So the classic example would be Avodah Zarah. You have an animal. I worship your animal. Ah, your animal now is a chefza shel Avodah Zarah, right? No, ridiculous. You have a car. I worship your car. Your car now is usher to you as Avodah Zarah. No, of course not. Ridiculous. In other words, just because I decide that I'm going to deify your car, okay? I know you can insert a Musar comment over here, but I'll pass on that. So just because I decided that your car to me is going to be a god, so that doesn't affect your car whatsoever. Okay, because that's not how halacha works. I can make something that I own a cheftza of Avodah Zarah, but I can't make something you own a cheftza shel Avodah Zarah. Yeah. So over there, I totally understand, because it's a function of my machshava. Avodah Zarah is something that has to do with intent. And over here, the halacha does not allow me to give your item a status where it's based on my intention. That I get. But let's say I go into your house as you're cooking cholent, and I decide, hey, what a funny gag if I pour milk into it. Okay, so what I did was not only wrong, but did I make basar b'chalav? 100%. I made Basa B'chalaf. Wait one second. It's not my cholent, it's his cholent. And don't we say, Ein Adam Osir Dav Hashem Shalo? Yeah, but you can't ignore reality. The reality is, it's Basa B'chalaf. Okay. So now, where's Kalayim? Is Kalayim more like Basa B'chalaf? Or is Kalayim more like Avodah Zarah? So, right. So if you would have asked me prior to this Gemara, I wouldn't even understood the question. Kalayim sounds a lot more like Basa B'chalaf than it does Avodah Zarah. And what we're seeing together and what we're learning together right now, not so fast. Meaning Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon say that if I take my grapevines and I lay it on top of your grains, it doesn't create Kalayim. That's Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, and that's Halacha. This is an intentional Isser. It's not just a reality Isser. And Tosa says, that's right. That's right. When it comes to Kalayim, Kalayim is much more a function of intention than it is the reality. Now, I know it's a little bit hard to explain, and I'm not going to see the top Tosas over here, where he discusses exactly this point, but it's clear from the Gemara that Kalayim is more a function of intention than it is an issue of reality. Okay? That's a lot to digest. Okay, now, Ibailahu. Let's do a little bit more for this morning, and that is, let's cover our bases. We know Rav holds like Rav Yossi on two issues. We know Shmuel holds like Rav Yossi on two issues. What about the flip? So Ibailahu, that's the Gemara's question. Beanjajanus Mali Amar Shmuel. What is Shmuel's position regarding anjajanus? Tashma Damar Shmuel Ravanan Lay Silabraisa Mikami Mastisan. Okay, we don't hold to the Braisa, we favor the Mishnah over that of the Braisa. Meaning, what is the anjajanus? The anjajanus is a Vade Zachar. Okay, now, is Rav in agreement with that? Not clear. Because we know that Rav says the halacha is like Rav Yossi. What we don't know is which Rav Yossi. Rashi and Tosos both say the Rav Yosef of our Mishnah. If you learn like Rashi and Tosos, so then it comes out that Rav and Shmuel are in perfect alignment with one another. Okay. Happens to be, again, the Rambam doesn't agree. The Rambam's of the position that when Rav favors Rav Yosef, he means Rav Yosef of the Raisa, not of the Mishnah. So that means Rav and Shmuel are not in agreement. And that, of course, means that the Rambam favored Rav of the Raisa. I should say better. Rav Yosef of the Raisa. Okay. If all that isn't clear. I hope it is. Okay, Harkava Mali, Amar Shmuel. What does Shmuel say regarding Harkava? Meaning, again, three opinions, and we know that Rav favors Rav Yossi's position that the Harkava has to be done 2 weeks prior, to 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah, meaning 44 days. Where does Shmuel stand on that? So the Gemara says, Harkava Mali, Amar Shmuel, Tashma, Damar Le Shmuel, Ravanan, Tani Kaman, Damar, Shloshev, Shloshem. So on this, Shmuel disagrees. Rav says 44 days, Shmuel says 33 days. Next, Koshi, Maliyama Rav, Teku. What's Rav's position regarding Koshi? Again, the labor discharging, which doesn't count towards Ziva discharge. So we know that Shmuel's of the position of like Rav Yossi, of 2 weeks. Where does Rav stand on that? Gemara says, I don't know. Kiddush, Maliyama Rav. What does Rav say regarding when I take my grapevines and put them over my friend's wheat? Did I create Kalayim? Do I have to make restitution? That's a Machlokas Tanayim. We know what Shmuel says. Shmuel's like the Rav Yossi, that you didn't make Kalayim. What does Rav say? I'm Rav Yossi, Shashmad, I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rav, ain't Allah like Rav Yossi. So, Rav says that Allah is not like Rav Yossi. I'm Leah by Machas is Smachtaha, Smachaha. So the Gemara says, wait one second. I can also quote Rav in a different way. I'm Rav Ada, I'm Rav Allah like Rav Yossi. Rav Ada says the name of the halacha is in fact like Rav Yossi, meaning you were not Mekadesh, meaning you didn't create Kalayim in somebody else's field. Amr Be Rav, Manu Rav Huna. Rav Huna Amar Ein Halacha. So the Gemara says, well, Be Rav is who? Be Rav is Rav Huna. Again, this is based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that we know the identity of Be Rav. Be Rav is code for Rav Huna. And we know that Rav Huna says that the halacha is not like Rav Yossi. So in terms of a Mesorah of what Rav said, we're going to trust Rav Huna. That according to Rav, the halacha is not like Rav Yossi. So in terms of being mekadesh somebody else's field, a machlokas tanaim and a machlokas amraim in terms of what the halacha is. Okay. Let's do a little bit more for this morning. Rav Yehuda Amar Tumtum. Okay. In terms of a tumtum, so there's a membrane covering the area. So his gender is right now unknown simply because the primary sexual characteristics are simply being covered. So we don't know. So, what do we learn in the Mishnah? That in the Mishnah, going all the way back to Pei Aleph, we know that according to Rav Yossi, Where did I go? No, not Rav Yossi. Rav Yehuda. We know that according to Rav Yehuda, Tumtum Shenikra V'Nimsa Zachar Lo Yachlots Mimnei Shu Kisris, that if the Tumtum's membrane is exposed, and it turns out that he's a male, so he does not do Chalitza. Why? Because he's a Sris. Okay? There's some correlation between being a Tumtum, and if he's a male, he'll be a Sris. Okay, that's Shitas Rav Yehuda. On that, the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Ami, my Avilei Rav Yehuda leTumtum deBir Duos veAbei Karsavik Revo leSheva Banim." So, what's Rav Yehuda going to do about the following case study? So, there was a tumtum. So, his membrane was opened up. Turned out to be a male. Then he had relations with his wife, and they had not one but seven children. New? What's Rav Yehuda going to say about that? So, Rav Yehuda Amarle Chazar Al Banev Meinheim. So, what Rav Yehuda says is, "Oh, you gave me a case study. That's wonderful. Did you really research that one particular case?" Meaning, are you sure that he's the father? I don't know. Meaning, it could very well be that somebody else is the father. If all you got is just simply one case, not enough to come away, walk away with any conclusions. Okay, Tanya. Second time, by the way, in this parak, where just because you showed me a case where he fathered a child, I don't know if he's the father. Could be somebody else, right? Okay, Tanya. So here in the Brice of Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, not to be confused with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is Rav Yehuda. The Brice is Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. So a tumtum should not do chalitza because the membrane may open up and nimsa srischama. He'll end up becoming a srischama, meaning impotent. So out to call the mikra zachar have. So the Gemara says, first of all, when you open up the membrane, he's for sure going to be male? Of course not. Meaning the whole point is that the membrane covering the primary sexual characteristic, and you can open up the membrane and might be that you won't see male genitalia, you may see female genitalia. So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, you're right. So shem yikra v'nimsa nekeva, v'afilu nimsa zachar, shem yimsa sris chama. So good. So just to clarify what he meant as follows. You open up the membrane. So first of all, maybe a woman. And even if it's a man, maybe a sris chama. Okay, fine. Is Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda saying the same thing as Rav Yehuda? The Gemara says, not exactly. So the Gemara says that there's subtle differences between Rav Yosef and subtle differences between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Yehuda, our tumtum is, if he's a male, he's for sure Sris Chama, meaning definitively. According to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, maybe a Sris Chama. Now, that's a different. And the Gemara notes that there are two nafkaminas based on how you're going to say it. Meaning, let's go for number one. Lifso b'makamachim. So let's say, for example, there are other brothers. Functional other brothers. Right? And the tumtum decided that he's going to do chalitza. He shouldn't have, but he decided to do so. So according to Rav Yehuda, so who says he's definitively a sris, so what was his chalitza? Nothing. Zero. Therefore, if the other brothers, any of the other brothers, want to jump in and do yibum, they absolutely may, because what the tumtum did is nothing. Again, the tumtum is either nekeva, which certainly is not going to have any halachic impact, and even if he's a zachar sushchama, and therefore will not affect his that chalitza will have no status. On the other hand, if you hold like Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, maybe he's a sushchama, which means what? If he did chalitza, that has to be regarded as something. Now, is it a full chalitza? No. But is it a quasi-chalitza? Yes. What do we know about quasi-chalitza? None of the other brothers now can do yibum. Okay, that's one nafkamina. Let's go over another nafkamina. Let's say he's the only surviving brother. Now, if you ask Rav Yehuda, so what does he do? So, nothing. Why? Because he doesn't have a mitzvah of chalitza. He doesn't have a mitzvah of anything. Again, he may be in a keva, which clearly takes him out of the parsha. And even if he's a zachar, according to Rav Yehuda, but he's definitively a sris chama, which means then that he has no mitzvah. Okay. But according to Rav Yehuda, it's only suffix sris chama, which means that we have to entertain there at least as a possibility that he may be a potent male. Maybe. But on the possibility that he's a potent male, so now he's going to have to do chalitza. Again, another nafkamina. Just a little bit more. No, let's pause over here. Okay, tomorrow we'll finish up the perek. Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow we'll start the new perek. Okay, let's quickly recap. Oh. So the beginning of today's daf. So we talked about the androgynous. The androgynous is definitively a male. So this is our third day of litigating this question. Rav Yochanan says definitively a male. Reish Lakish says safek. And now we go back to our Mishnah. We read the Mishnah. He's marrying a woman, right? No say. Lechatchila. Sounds like he's definitively a male. Okay, so there's a way to read the Mishnah in defense of Reish Lakish, and that's what we started off our daf today. Isn't Rabbi Lazar, who clearly articulates and states that he's a male, isn't that in contrast to the Tanakama, who holds that he's a safek, and that would be a point for Reish Lakish? Gemara says, nah. Everyone in the Mishnah holds he's definitively a male. It's just a question of when he's involved in Mishkav Zachar, so how many recognized orifices does he have? Clearly, B'yishalo Kedarka is an act of Mishkav Zachar, but for this androgynous, what about the front? Is that also going to be an act of Mishkav Zachar? That's the debate. But clearly he's a male. Then, halacha. Okay, and this is where it got confusing. Meaning, the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. That we could say. Which Rav Yossi? Because then the daf introduces us to two Rav Yossis on the top of Pei Gimel. There's Rav Yossi of our Mishnah, definitively a male. Rav Yossi of the Braisa, Suffolk. And again, even within Suffolk, we're not sure what that means. Suffolk meaning it's male or female, or Suffolk, Birya Bifniatsma, its own separate category. But regardless, so there are two Rav Yossis. So which Rav Yossi do we favor? Machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. Okay? And so admittedly, the daf leaves us off in a state of confusion in terms of how to qualify, how to categorize the androgynous. Is he definitively a male? If you asked Rashi at the end of the daf, where does he stand? Definitively a male. If you asked the Rambam by the end of the daf, he would say suffolk. And even then, it sounds like from the Rambam, again, I'm not reading it, so I'm encouraging you to look it up. So it sounds like from the Rambam, birya bifnei atzma, its own separate category. Okay, so even as we conclude the daf, not clear where exactly we stand in terms of the categorization of the androgynous. And in four areas of halacha, we follow like Rabbi Yossi. Rav says two of them we follow like Rav Yossi in two areas, one androgynous and the other one Zarkava. Shmuel says that we follow like Rav Yossi on two different halachas, and that is Koshi and Kiddush. And we went over the four halachas this morning. On the Amud Beis, where does Rav stand on the other two issues? On the Amud Beis, where does Shmuel stand on the other two issues? The Gemara went over that as well. Finally, our last point that we covered this morning is going to be the Tumtum. So the Tumtum is what? So the Tumtum is an unknown, meaning the membrane is covering the area, so we don't know. But where does the Tumtum stand in terms of the mitzvah of Chalitza? So there we have now two viewpoints. We have Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, and we have Rav Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah says that even if the Sris is a male, he's for sure impotent. And that means to say that there's mamash no mitzvah whatsoever. Masha Inkin, according to Rav Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, no, he may be a male, and he may be a potent male. So on the consideration that he may be a potent male, so then he's going to have to do Chalitza on the chance that he may be a potent male. Good? And that's where we ended off today. The learning that we do this